everyone to today's episode of Echo This. We are so delighted that you're here and that we have a little opportunity to share with you some exciting news that is happening for us since we've all gotten together almost 2 years ago. Here we are, and we thought you'd like to know a little bit about how we formed Echo, what it stands for, what our hopes are for you, and how your life can be enhanced by carrying over some of the messages and echoing us. Not very long ago, our paths crossed at a workshop where we were all honing our messages, and we wanted to be a little bit active on the speaker circuit. And what attracted us to each other is something very unique. We were kind of sitting next to each other on Zoom, and the more conversations we had, the more curious we became, and the more interested we became in each other. And we decided to form this collaboration called ECHO, standing for Empowering Conversations of Hope and Opportunity. You may be interested to know that we are women from very different backgrounds, very different life experiences, and we span four decades. One of us is in our 40s, one in our 50s, 60s, and 70s. So we have a beautiful amalgam of experiences and of life witnessing of things that we feel we can now share with you. So what we're going to do today is we're going to give you a little insight into who we are and share with you that we are going to be soon launching a book, and we're inviting you to share our adventure. The more we converse with each other, the more we find that we have common threads, common core themes, which all of you hopefully will identify with. And this deeply affirming direction that we've taken in building community is about exploring our common goals. And these goals focus on creativity, health, play, and joy. And this is what we passionately offer to you. All good things begin with good health. And we're going to start our roundtable today with Debbie Wimberly. And Debbie, we often hear the term quality health, something we all desire, but you say health quality. Is there a difference?
Thank you, Amy. Yes, there's definitely a difference. Quality health, this term is all about the high standard of health we all aim for. Sadly, that standard isn't met worldwide, and especially in the U.S., statistics paint a grim picture. 1 in 3 adults globally suffer with a chronic illness, and over 50% of U.S. adults have at least one chronic condition. Clear sign that our health standards need a major overhaul. Flip side, health quality focuses on the care you receive in your healthcare system. It's about making sure treatments are effective, safe, and patient-centered, while ensuring the healthcare system runs effectively, and I say equally for everyone. Unfortunately, the current stats show that our healthcare system is leaving many patients with less than ideal health. And this is where my focus on health quality comes into play. While we strive for quality health, health quality addresses the broader healthcare system, helping individuals achieve and maintain health excellence. And it means acknowledging the overlooked endocannabinoid system. Not something that most people have never even heard of.
Thank you, Debbie. And with a foundation in health, which is Debbie's our health advocate, we then can focus in our lives on something very special that Lisa proposes, and that is dedicating her studies and her career to the power of play, being like no other, infusing humor and success in our relationships at home and in the workplace as well. So Lisa, in what ways do lessons learned through play differ from those learned through more formal educational settings? And how can these lessons be applied to grown-up success?
Well, great question, Amy. First, I want to just say a little bit more about myself. I'm Lisa Jones, a speaker, consultant, and author that leverages the power of humor, gamification, and play as fuel to enhance collaboration, increase engagement, and maximize productivity. Now, to answer your question, I look at this as a delightful dance of play versus the serious strides of formal education. So I'll say yay to that. When we play, we are like explorers on a treasure hunt, if you will. So instead of textbooks, we were armed with curiosity, right? And imagination. We learn by doing. We learn by experimenting, and we learn by failing. But without the dread of red marks and report cards. Who remembers those red marks on the report cards? Not fun. Play is all about trial and error, and it teaches us resilience, creativity, and the thrill of discovery. But as grown-ups, we can sprinkle this playful magic into our serious endeavors. We can embrace challenges with the same zest we had when we were conquering a jungle gym. We can problem solve. It becomes an exciting puzzle to solve, and setbacks are just plot twists in your adventure. So play brings a sense of fearlessness, the courage to try new things, and the belief that it's okay to stumble as long as you keep dancing towards success. So I would say to that, Amy, keep dancing.
Well, talking about courage and talking about dancing and experiencing and overcoming and striving, we have Michaela Cox with us. And Michaela, give us some insights about how in your life's journey, what has been your biggest challenge to dance through and dance in the rain?
Thanks, Amy. Before I answer that good question, I'm going to introduce myself as well. I'm Michaela S. Cox. I'm an author and speaker, and I have had an interesting journey that has taken me through disability, divorce, and death. And I have learned to go from surviving to thriving on that journey with several things that have equipped me along the way. And as that leads right into the answer to this question of, I think even though it's all been challenging, probably the biggest challenge has been over the last 6.5 years of when I have become a widow and a solo mom following the death of my beloved husband. And it's taught me a lot, and I've learned many lessons about what it is to travel grief and loss. And one thing I would say about that is that in that journey, as hard as it is, you have to get comfortable with the uncomfortable and understand that it's your journey and your journey alone. And that's okay, because you're the one that's traveling it and no one else can travel it for you. So you have to do it your way and do the next right thing for you.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that your disability is since birth, and so many of us have these life experiences that really blossom and grow from the seeds of our childhood. And for me, and my name is Amy Weishaus. I'm a lifelong educator and learner. I spent the bulk of my career in the English classroom teaching journalism and English and helping my students find their voices, helping to promote conversation, helping to have a safe place where we can all feel empowered as if our voice matters, life matters. And I learned that very early in life from a sister who was born with Down syndrome, who was awaiting my arrival. My mom always said, I always hoped for a playmate for Joycey. And there I was. So growing up with a sister who was developmentally disabled and having a mother who had been a teacher, no less, my early life was punctuated by being aware of differences, aware of some nastiness that my sister received because she was different and people didn't understand her difference in that era. It was before the politically correct understanding of special needs children. So I grew up with a lot of empathy, learned empathy and gratitude for being who I was and capable to do what I could. So a lot of my platform and my book chapters are about how we need to be aware and sensitive to the person next to us, just as we women were in being next to each other on the Zoom screen, but being so intrigued by each other's uniqueness that we could come together and say and do wonderful things together, enhancing all of us. So I'd like to get now back to Debbie, because in enhancing all of us and our health quality, you talk a lot about being our own health quality advocate. How does that happen, and why does it matter?
Well, I'll introduce myself here. I am a health quality advocate because I had to become one. And learning to be a health quality advocate involves an active role in managing your health, understanding your health, and making informed decisions about your well-being. You only get one health and one life, and no one lives either but you. By actively engaging and staying informed about your health, you become a powerful advocate in your health quality.
Well, we have some wonderful advocates here on our panel, and in advocating for the joy and power of play, Lisa, let's bring it right to the home and to the classroom. How can parents and educators encourage, and how can they facilitate productive playtime for children to help them develop life skills, essential life skills, just as Debbie talks about the essential life skill of caring for your health?
Yes, I think we can start by making playtime a whimsical wonderland for kids, because that's really where parents and educators, if they picture this, playtime isn't just about building castles with blocks or chasing butterflies. It's like an enchanted workshop where the magic of life skill is crafted. And if you think about it like this, here's the recipe for a playtime potion. You can sprinkle a pinch of imagination. You can add a dash of creativity and mix in a whole lot of curiosity. Then you can stand back and watch the fun unfold. And this encourages the kids to be little scientists, exploring the world around them. They can turn chore into treasure hunts, math problems into exciting mysteries, and reading into adventures with characters they adore. Who doesn't like to take their favorite characters and do that? But don't forget the secret ingredient, I'll say here, laughter. Play should be filled with giggles, tickles, and moments of pure joy. In this enchanted playtime, kids will not only build essential life skills like a problem solving, teamwork, and empathy, but also create a lifelong love for learning and discovering. Parents and educators, they become the wizards of playtime and let the magic of skill building begin. So that, my friend, is play.
What a wonderful balance we always strike here in our conversations, because not always have we, as women, as mothers, as spouses, as educators, co-workers, not always have we had everything just like an afternoon in the sandbox. And there have been times, Michaela writes a lot about the knocks on the door of her life and how she's responded to these knocks on her door. And I know, Michaela, you've come up thriving with your system of grace, G-R-A-C-E. Why are these keys to grace so important?
Because I believe that while there are different obstacles that we all go through and challenges, and what my obstacles are aren't another person's and another person's aren't mine, but once you make the choice to be an overcomer and strive to thrive, it's like muscle memory. You learn to do a skill set and you do reps of it, and your muscles learn how to do it. So whether it's a medical thing or a financial thing or a relationship thing, it's still the idea of overcoming, and what it takes to overcome is the same, no matter what you're having to overcome. So I believe these principles of grace, of finding your ground, you're gaining your grounding and being redesigned in life, and abundance and choosing care and being equipped, can help anyone, no matter what they're trying to overcome, be fueled and equipped with the tools they need to do so, which is basically what the keys are. And for me, I think the two most important ones in that equation is the idea that it's all about choices. We choose to overcome. No one's going to do it for you. No one's going to make you do it. You have to be willing to make those hard choices. And it takes courage, and it's not easy. That no matter what you're handed in life, that if you want to get to the other side of it and not just survive, you're going to have to choose that path. And in choosing that path, you're going to need an abundant mindset that is positive and healthy and allows you to be clear-minded to stay focused to the choices that you want.
Well, we've all made choices in the perspective and the emphasis that we want to place on our worldview. And my corner of the world here, as I hinted in my first response, is about early lessons, early life lessons, and how that can plant seeds of joy for all of us. And I choose joy as one of my main coping mechanisms in life. And I so firmly believe that each one of us has the power to create joy no matter what. And using Michaela's elements of grace, we all need to feel a responsibility, and we need to feel the absolute bliss of creating joy by showing empathy every day to other people, by asking questions, by learning about people, by smiling at them, by creating an inviting, safe environment to say, your life matters. And I know that one of the aligned themes for all of us is that we so believe that each one of us has confidence buried within them, perhaps, or maybe more at the surface, but each one of us can tap into that reservoir of being able to see the power of showing gratitude to the people who are important to us, seeing how that exponentially gets paid forward, and sharing with others what they mean to us. And by looking to spread empathy every day, we can choose joy. And I like to go, you know, in addition to Michaela's wonderful keys to grace, I like to emphasize the joy component, which has made a remarkable difference in my life, overcoming chronic illness, overcoming an understanding of other life challenges, and including the understanding of a sister with developmentally disabled tendencies. So, Lisa, getting back to you and this wonderful journey of play and how it empowers us all. How can the transformative power of play and laughter be harnessed to help individuals heal from trauma and cope with illness?
Yes, we'll talk about the healing power of play and laughter. It's really like a magic elixir for your soul. And if you think about it this way, when we engage in playful activities and share hearty laughter, our bodies then release a flood of happy chemicals. They're called endorphins. These little mood boosters work wonders. They reduce stress and pain, and they promote a sense of well-being. But if we think about it, play like this, it becomes a refuge, a safe haven where individuals can escape the weight of trauma or illness, whether it's painting, dancing, or even a round of silly jokes. It serves as a gentle distraction from the challenges at hand. And laughter, on the other hand, it's like a healing symphony. It massages the heart and mind. It reduces our anxiety and depression. And it's really one of those things that's a communal experience that bonds people together, creating a support network that's essential for healing. But in order to harness this magic, Amy, we should encourage laughter clubs, playful art therapies, and group games that allow individuals to find joy amid during adversity. Laughter is, after all, the best medicine. But together, we can heal, we can cope, and we emerge from trauma or illness with spirits uplifted and hearts lightened. That's the power of it, Amy.
Wow. I know that laughter has such a great power to heal, and we don't often take to mind that our words Our words, whether they're humorous words or not, our words have so much power to either really have people soaring in life or to bring them down to the darkest depths. And I think about bullying, and I think about how devastating words are to people in ways that we may not even realize. So if we acknowledge that people are being bullied and people are being told negative things, no, you'll never amount to that, or you'll never do that. We have to know that our words change lives. And how many of you have a box or in a drawer, you have some cards that you've received, cards that when you open up those greeting cards or those letters that people wrote to you, or maybe it was a letter of recommendation to college that a teacher wrote, and you saw yourself suddenly with new eyes. I remember somebody writing in my college letter of recommendation, I was ebullient. I didn't even know what the word meant. I learned a new vocabulary word, ebullient. Oh, he thinks I'm bubbling over and I'm animated. Isn't that cool that Mr. Raimondo thought that of me? And I adored that administrator. And then he said something about Amy has an indelible stamp of what she does on everything she undertakes. I have those words emblazoned in my mind forever. And they did so much to bolster my self-esteem and my belief in myself. So our words matter. And that shows other people in the smallest way that because they matter, they have that power to create that joy in somebody else. And that's the magic. Lisa talks about magic. I'm a magician along with her. We have the power of these wonderful, wonderful words. And in our lives, when the, you know, knocks come knocking at the door, and courageous people like Michaela have keys to grace, I'm curious, which one do you think is the most essential? I'm the joy advocate. Lisa's the play advocate. And what do you think is the most essential key, Michaela?
I would have, even though I spoke about abundant mindset, it still comes down to choice, because nothing starts without you choosing. I mean, even doing nothing is still a choice. So our life's journey is literally the result of our choices strung together, because if we made one set of choices, we'd go down a different path. If we made a different set of choices, it will lead down a different path. So in everything you do, you're making a choice. And that's what it takes to start someone overcoming, is choosing, am I going to take what I've been handed, or am I going to make it my own, or am I going to just deal with it, or am I going to figure out how to do different? It's all about choices. You have nothing without choices.
Well, I know that all of us subscribe to that belief that we all have choices. And going back to my proposals about joy, we have a choice to be happy or not. We have a choice to be joyful or not. And in line with that, there are ways that each one of us can develop that muscle of empathy every single day. I sometimes like to ask myself at the end of a day, what did I do today? What one thing, at least one thing did I do today consciously to lift someone up? Did I choose to make a difference? Did I choose to show someone my interest, my support, and my concern? We're all teachers. All of us, aside from, you know, the fact that I was literally one in the classroom, we are all teachers, and we model a certain behavior. I alluded before to the impact, the lasting impact of joy. Henry Adams wrote, "A teacher affects eternity. He never knows where his influence stops." And I believe that's true of every one of us, parents, teachers, classmates, our peers. Even our social icons and our celebrities, don't we learn also from their platforms and from the causes that they celebrate and so on? So we're about catalysts for conversation. We're about, like we, Echo, we are about getting people together to start conversations that are going to solve problems, heal, and elevate, and celebrate one another. So let's get back to the catalyst of games and humor. And Lisa, explain a little more about how games and humor serve as catalysts for conversations about opportunity and about change in various contexts, such as the workplace or in even personal relationships.
Well, games and humor are like the secret sauce for sparking conversations about opportunity and change, which you were just discussing, Amy. But in the workplace, they are the icebreakers that melt away tension. They create a playful atmosphere where everyone feels more at ease, and that's what we want after all. Just like playing a game of office trivia or cracking a well-timed joke, they foster camaraderie and they open the door to discussions about new opportunities and fresh ideas. If we look at personal relationships, humor is really the glue that binds our hearts. Games are the bridges that connect souls. They make conversations feel less like a serious negotiation and more like an enjoyable journey. And when we laugh together or we engage in friendly competition, it's easier to talk about our dreams, aspirations, and the changes we want to make. So in both of these contexts, games and humor are disarming, really. They break down the walls of resistance and they encourage participation. They help us embrace the unknown with that sense of adventure, making discussions about change and opportunities feel exciting rather than daunting. So if we think about whether you're rolling the dice in the boardroom or you're sharing a good laugh with loved ones, you want to remember that games and humor, they're your trusty sidekicks in the quest for meaningful conversations about opportunity and change. They have the power to turn talks into adventures.
Well, we all know that initiating these talks and adventures may be the starting point. That's the most difficult because sometimes people don't believe they have anything to say, or they don't feel playful. Oh, I'm not a funny person, or I'm not playful. So we need to model, even when we don't feel we're the most playful person in the world, we need to model that. But how do we do it? I love when you say that even strangers can become quick friends and have a really strong bond between each other just because they've shared a joke. And how you say that melts away any inhibitions, even in the workplace where you have new hires or, you know, people who don't always know how they want to come across with their management or their CEO in the same room. But humor is the great leveler. And we can create this kind of joy. We mirror one another. And I often refer to the mirror neurons in our brain that actually mirror and imitate the feelings and expressions and emotions of another. So we make a big fuss over little babies and we say, oh, you're so cute. And we start talking baby talk and we go to the zoo and we're aping like the chimps and we're making exotic bird calls. And that is a scientific behavior. There's science behind that, that humans and animals do this. So when we mirror happiness and joy, it is contagious and people do then start. So what Lisa's saying, if it sounds difficult to you, I'm the partner in joy there to say you must sometimes get a little out of your comfort zone, but when you start exploring and finding out the things you have in common, I met someone recently and she used to date my cousin and we were hysterical over that. I mentioned, oh, I have a cousin who's a dentist, and she said, oh, and what's his name? Oh, I dated him. And I thought, wow, you know, and we'll never forget it. So the most unexpected little things the laughter can't begin until you start talking to one another. And that's what it's all about. You got to be a little bit uninhibited. That's where it starts.
Yeah, so, and Amy, that's such a great point that you bring up, because that also reminds me of a lot what Debbie talks about, and I would love to hear her thoughts on advocacy.
I think when it comes to advocacy, one of the biggest problems is that we're not allowed to be partners today in our health when we talk to our healthcare providers. Finding the quality health that you need and the help that, just finding a doctor today is really difficult. I'm an expert at this as of recent, trying to find a doctor to take care of me. I've had been on the phone making numbers of calls, and this person's out sick this week. They can't, and nobody else can make an appointment for you. And this is a serious problem that we have to address. The other part of this is that we're ignoring a system that we're all born with, which is called your endocannabinoid system. And it's an, it plays an important role, and it needs to be a partner in your health as well. So the health system that we have, we've put a ton of money in it, but it is not working for us as a patient. And just getting a doctor to listen to you and understand what's going on is not as easy as it seems. Being told that it's all in your head when you're having pain or dealing with something is not a correct answer. If you live with your body, you know your body the best. And when somebody walks into the room and has only seen you for maybe 2 seconds, and they're trying to tell you what you're saying is not real or doesn't matter, isn't the way we should be dealing with health. So we need to be able to be a partner in our health. We're looking for some healthcare provider that will partner with us, and that our voice is just as important as theirs.
And all of us feel that part of our mission, our reason to live and to be, is because we want to have our voice heard. Because at some point in all of our lives, we were bullied, or we were very ill, or we felt confused and we felt a lack of support. We didn't feel a peer group. I lived with a chronic illness, an autoimmune disease called Crohn's, for 40 years without knowing one person who had the same illness. Think about that. I was working too hard to go to support groups. They were in Manhattan. By the time I lived in New Jersey, by the time I came home at night, I was so depleted, I couldn't even think about going to a support group. So what we're talking about, all of us, is partnership. Partnership with ourselves and partnership with each other. Because the most amazing world materializes from these partnerships and these conversations. And Michaela, you have so many messages based on parenting, becoming a widow, your scholarship, and so many things. What is a major message that you want to echo out for people to hear?
I would have to agree that it's advocacy, because it's the ultimate thing of taking a bet on yourself and daring to be different about choosing what you want for you. But as far as my overall message, I would say that there is no promise of tomorrow, and we get one shot to live this amazing life. So choose well, and in your choices, allow yourself to know how to go from surviving to thriving as you go through your doors and receiving those knocks, because in choosing well, you will be able to do what you have to do and learn how to actually thrive in life and live your best life.
Yes, based on a life rich in experience, for sure. And, you know, Debbie, you just mentioned a lot about the obstacles in one taking care of one's health. And there's a piece of imagery that always fascinates me that I relate to now more than ever, that you instilled. And it's about developing an effective compass, an internal effective compass that each one of us can achieve. Can you explain what is that compass? How does one go about creating one, and to what effect?
Thank you, Amy. Well, an effective compass in health is metaphorically represents a reliable guide or tool that individuals can navigate in their complex health. It's an effective compass that embodies the keys and aspects of who you are and what your health should be. And here's just a few examples. You need to be well educated and informed. An effective compass provides individuals with accurate and comprehensive information about your health conditions, treatments, medications, and preventative measures so that you can understand for yourself how they're working. It guides you in holistic health approaches, considering yourself as a whole person, mentally, socially, physically, and providing personalized guidance. An effective compass empowers individuals to be active participants in their healthcare journey. It encourages them to ask questions, seek different options, and actively engage in discussions about their treatment options. Understanding who you are and how your body talks to you is one of the most important things that you will ever learn about guiding your health. And how often our body speaks to us, sometimes it whispers and sometimes it screams, but are you listening? Make sure you're paying attention to what it's telling you, because that is when you will become your best partner in your health and hopefully help your doctors guide you in the right direction.
And I know when all has been lost, you have sometimes had to have found humor in the most bizarre and shocking and surreal circumstances. And it's always amazing how we can go back to some trauma and still find the humor in it and still find that sustaining spark of humanity and hope. And again, with that humor and that element of play, let's go back to Lisa. How can the element of play or humor be used strategically in difficult or sensitive conversations, like the ones Debbie's talking about, to foster a more positive and open dialogue?
Yes, Amy. Well, I think thinking about it as like this, if you think about difficult conversations are like intricate puzzles, and play and humor are the secret keys to unlock them. So when things get tough or sensitive, humor is your ally. So think about it as your friend. It's a well-timed joke or a lighthearted comment that can really break the ice and diffuse tension. Laughter acts as a shield against the discomfort. It allows everyone to exhale and find common ground. When play, on the other hand, turns the discussion into a game of collaboration. Imagine it's a realm, or it's a team challenge where you and your conversation partner are working together to find these solutions. Playful approaches like brainstorming through colorful mind maps, or you can use metaphors to explain complex concepts. You can really simplify the conversation and encourage a positive atmosphere. And strategically, you can use humor as a bridge connecting people through shared smiles and chuckles. It's the universal language that really transcends those differences. And play, on the other hand, turns that challenge into a puzzle to solve together. And who doesn't like to solve puzzles? It encourages cooperation and a sense of accomplishment. And in that realm of challenging conversations that we're talking about, play and humor can become your trusty tools. It makes the dialogue positive, open, and maybe even a little fun. And remember this, when we laugh and play together, we find solutions with a smile, Amy. Smile.
Well, I want to dovetail on some things that Debbie just said about having a voice and partnering with your doctors and asking questions, and about, you know, what Lisa proposes about the magic of laughter in healing and in a true coming together of people. And I believe that empathy is so at the core of this. And unfortunately, our institutions have not always had empathy towards the patient or the student, and really has needed to be more and more sensitized given what's going on in the world, in society. And because of that, we know that hospitals now are offering programs in empathy. There's an empathy project in a major New York City hospital that's been around to instill in doctors and caregivers and nurses the need to be sensitive and the need to be caring and have an interpersonal relationship with the patients. Also, the patient is encouraged to demand and to expect that he or she has a voice in his treatment and can be a partner in that. These have not always been a given, but there's been a need for them, and now they are more and more around the country in the medical establishment especially. People find also on college campuses where there's a great amount of stress. Some of the Ivy League schools have in their curriculum courses in happiness. They are well attended. They're not just gut courses like fluffy courses. They actually deal with science, and they deal with the physical effects of joy and smiling and happiness and all the good things Lisa pointed out, the physical and mental health benefits. So some people joke and say, oh yeah, but seriously, there is a master's program now in happiness and there's a certificate in happiness. So it must be an extremely important priority in our society today. And unless we realize that that begins with us and our ability also to laugh at ourselves and go a little bit sometimes out of our comfort zone to risk laughing at ourselves with others, people will see that and they'll say, boy, this is a real human being, and I can be a little bit like that too. Wouldn't hurt. I'm just thinking, we always used to hear our parents say, oh, that doctor has a bedside manner. So that was the doctor who was gentle and kind and empathetic, and you always heard that person being set apart. Oh, everybody should have a bedside manner, you know, and that's the goal today. So, Michaela, in kind of coming full circle in our discussion, I want to ask you now, what one takeaway message what would you like the listeners today to take away if they have one thing to take away from Michaela S. Cox?
I would say dare to be different and take a bet on yourself and choosing to live your best life by learning how to not just survive but thrive and do it your way on your journey.
And in daring to be different, Debbie, how would you respond to the one golden takeaway that you would like to leave in the listeners' minds and hearts?
Everyone gets one health and one life, and no one lives either but you. So in my mind, we should all learn how to be in charge of our health ourselves and partner with a doctor. Living your best health and life is so hard, especially in today's world with all the emotional stresses that we have, the physical stresses that we have, and we focus on exercise, diet, enjoying where you work, people that you're around, but we ignore the one system that actually helps guide all of our health systems and make our health work and harmoniously, and it is called our endocannabinoid system. So if nothing else, leave here today going and figuring out what an endocannabinoid system is, pick up our book and read about it, and learn how you can start to guide that by using cannabinoid therapies.
And Lisa, the same question to you. What is one golden kernel or nugget that you want to leave readers, the listeners with today, and the readers once they get to our volume?
Well, Yes, we all have problems, and we can be creative when solving them by using laughter, games, and play.
And shifting a perspective, you know, that this is possible. You know, we know some grumpy, sad sex in our lives, and it has to begin with a shifting perspective and listening to other points of view about what's possible and about staying curious and just being infused with hope. Hope is our key to survival. I would like to ask the panel also on a closing note, something a little more personal. We have made it our passion and our intention to walk the talk here. You know, we've empowered each other with conversations of hope and opportunity. We aspire to, through our book, podcasts, and talks, we aspire to help others find their voice and to excel in being beautifully and powerfully human, which is their birthright and their gift to the world. So on a personal note, I want to ask you, what is one of the most memorable events or awarenesses or growth points of our collaboration together that you take away with you and that makes you a better, more fulfilled person? So I'm going to let you jump in as you crystallize your thoughts. What's a memorable, empowering echo of us being together and getting to this point today of this wonderful roundtable as colleagues?
I'm going to say, all the different tech challenges that we have together in our time together, almost 2 years, and I think turning them into some sort of puzzle to solve and a game. There's always something going on, and all of us have banded together in a collaboration, and no matter what time of day it is, like, somebody will jump in and help, and they'll be willing to put in many, many hours. I'm thinking Deborah Lee Wimberly, who likes to help us with all our tech issues. But yeah, like, the and time is, she doesn't have a lot of time, but she makes the time. So thank you for that, helping all of us with different tech issues. Like, that specifically speaks out, and just banding together, all of us, just making sure that each, like, taking care of each one of us to make sure that we get what we need. So no man left behind, or should I say no woman left behind here.
Thank you, Lisa, for that. I appreciate that very much. I love each one of you very much. I think that's one of the things that I will say, that I have not met any of these ladies in person. We have only met virtually because I do have a health issue that keeps me from being able to be in public and be around people because I have no immune system. But these ladies have welcomed me and graced me every day and allowed me to contribute to their lives. And this is what's one of the most important things about empowering conversations, is the contribution that we provide to one another. But each one of you have brought so much joy to my life and have given so many things of yourselves that make me a better person and make me want to help and support you. And this is what we're trying to do with our empowering conversations of hope. Each one of us have our own unique talents and our unique strengths. And when you put them together, oh man, are we a great big ball of fire, fun, happiness. We can cry together. We can do it all. So that's what empowering conversations are all about. So thank you, each one of you.
Michaela, your words.
I would say, I think we have discovered together the commonality that we share and the through lines of our empowering messages that can give hope and opportunity, which is what we're all about. And we literally live it out in what we do and everything we do. I would also say, as a writer, I do believe in the power of words, and we have individually, as equally, collectively, and collaboration-wise, have shown the empowerment that can come from our words that have given, hopefully, what is be seen as hope and opportunities to others as we continue our work, and that we have expressed and echoed not just our words, but the value to be found in sharing your message and your stories and your words, to always know that your voice matters, whether it's individually and equally collectively, because we have come together to share our individual voices, but to do it together as Echo and share the ripple effect that that can come into the world, to give the world ways of empowering, to be given hope and opportunities, to know that it is your voice that matters and what you say with it and how you can influence and empower the world together as Echo.
And I, myself, the elder stateswoman in the group, I must say that this collaboration has brought so much joy in discovering one another. We're all quirky, we're all funny, we're all serious, we're all strong and weak in different areas, and we're all there for each other. And we've discovered the power of echoing one another, learning from one another. The great respect is beautiful. And this is what the world needs. We need respect. I talk a lot about the person sitting next to you and a beautiful poem that I share about having curiosity and respect for the person sitting next to you, who is sacred. Each one of us is. And once we realize that, we walk with a different pace and with a different spirit. So I want to mention that Lisa, Michaela, and I met in person on sharing a platform recently, and it was like we were old friends. It was like we just were so comfortable. It's like we've known each other for years. So I want you to consider this not the close of this episode, but this is a beginning, an exciting beginning of a new era of your igniting conversations. Conversations that empower, educate, delight, and heal others. And, you know, sometimes these words and these conversations may truly save you or save another person from a bad decision or from a dark night of the soul. And the darkness can be easily lifted through your light. So our wishes for you, if I can sum up what we're all about and what we've been sharing this last hour, it's to approach life with laughter and creativity, always brightening your day. Honor the fun and the joy, the lessons of childhood play that Lisa expands upon in our book. Be a true health quality warrior by advocating for your health and develop your own effective compass. And learn about your ECS, your endocannabinoid system. You will be amazed. And as Michaela has found, find grace to overcome loss and grief when the knocks on the doors of life find you. And life is made up of choices. You must choose to be either the victim or the victor. So learn to thrive in all things, not merely survive. Because as she echoes, Debbie, you know, we get one shot in this life. And through empathy, walk forward confidently, knowing that your life matters. And know that you can create an endless legacy of joy. Empathy, I firmly believe, is our only path to survival. The world needs empathy, and it needs it now. And on that note, we wish you courage. We wish you strength to get your own conversations going now. So get out in the world and please echo your hearts out. Thank you so much for joining us today.
As we conclude today's Echo This broadcast, we extend our heartfelt gratitude to each of you for tuning in. Your engagement and support are vital as we strive to foster empowering conversations of hope and opportunity. Remember, the dialogue doesn't stop here. Keep echoing in your communities. We welcome your feedback and input on Instagram and LinkedIn at Echo Together, and via email at echotogether@gmail.com. That's Echo, the number 2, GETHER. Together, we amplify voices, ignite change, and inspire progress. Thank you for being an integral part of the conversation. For those interested in further exploration of our book, Echo This, it is available on Amazon.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo. Listen in for empowering conversations of hope and opportunity.